The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In the house today are certified financial planners Tony Payne and Cole Hammack. And today we're talking about retirement readiness at different stages of life. This is a fun one.
I'm excited.
Whether you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, there's lots of media play about this. A lot of conversation at my house about, you know, where you should be, how much should I have saved, what should I do to get there, right? And some people, obviously, much later in life. So let's get into it. We're going to start by addressing the stages of life. So what would you say is the very first important step to getting started, whether you're 20, 40, 50, 60?
I'll be honest, just paying attention is going to be the first step you can do, because I think, especially through your 20s, it's honestly so easy just to kind of almost float through that first decade, right? Because you're just getting paid for the first time, or you just got your job. Like, things are just now starting to happen that we're really not paying a lot of attention to the more minute details, the minutiae, like, how are my taxes working? What's going on with retirement savings? Am I taking advantage of a match? So I think you actually really need to start paying attention and not just take for granted that things will eventually fall into place, but start taking that into your own hands as early as possible.
And it comes fast. I can remember being at that stage and thinking, I have time to think about that.
Right? Your 20s aren't even real.
Right. And in your 20s, I don't know, you think, I don't make enough money. I have to pay off my debt first, or I have student loan debt, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. What do you tell clients that are younger, that are trying to kind of do it all, to besides, you know, paying attention to the details, what's the next step, Tony?
Well, it's really saving. I mean, that's the fundamental part. Again, I can't help but compare it to like weight loss or fitness, things like that. When you're that young, you're not anywhere close, hopefully, to the finish line. So the idea of just getting healthy habits to me is the key. So if you're already that young and you are paying attention and you're thinking ahead for the future, to me, the key is start saving. I mean, there's different ways to do that, whether it's a work retirement plan, an IRA, just saving in your boring old cash account or your checking or savings. All of these are good things. So I wouldn't want to steer someone away from good habits by trying to be perfect or get into the details.
You just nailed it. I'm thinking whether you're 20, 30, or 40, some people don't have the luxury of starting early and they're playing catch up, right? Mm-hmm. Those points are really valid, and getting over the emotional hump of saying, or putting your own roadblock up by saying, I don't have enough to start saving. Anything is better than nothing.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
And consistently.
1%, right? 1% even. I mean, Tracy, just to confirm that and say it too, I mean, now we see a lot more retirement plans or programs where they may increase automatically your contribution by about 1% a year, whatever you choose. So the idea of doing this automatic escalation in the plan is a great way to sometimes do forced savings and forget about it. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the earlier you start, maybe it's only 1%, but 10 years later, it's 10%. I mean, that may not be ideal, but if you're talking about starting somewhere, and maybe you've already missed it a little bit, and the cards are laid, you've got 3 kids, you've got the house, you've got your job, start somewhere. Just do that 1%, maybe even get a match if you're not getting that already. That, to me, is a great starting point.
And to get there, you have to first look at what your living expenses. We talk about this a lot. Get to know and get real with your spending and savings habits.
And I think a lot of that, too, kind of depends on when you're starting this conversation with yourself. Because when you're in your 20s, like, you're creating those living expenses. Like, you're building your own expectations for lifestyle. So the idea is, if you're thinking about this early, if you're paying attention early, then pay yourself first. and then build your lifestyle. Build those
people say that
after.
You say it, and I'm interrupting you. I'm sorry because I get excited about this. No. I can remember when I first came here, I heard you say it over and over and over again. Pay yourself first. Mm-hmm. But give me some, you know, sort of imaginary numbers, a generalization. You know, what is it? 10%? Is it 2%? Is it what you can save? Is there really a relevant percentage when someone says, "Pay yourself first, and then pay your bills and put the roof over your head"?
I think a lot of it obviously depends on where you are, what flexibility you have. Like if you're out on your own already, bills are kind of racking up, we're just trying to keep above water, that's a do what you can. But if you are in a position maybe where you can ease into just getting started a little bit easier, maybe we're still living at home, maybe we're paying parents a little bit, like a token amount of rent kind of thing, but we're saving up, then that affords you that ability to take that a little bit more, I don't want to say take that more seriously, but take advantage of that a little bit easier. So a lot of that's going to depend on your position, but certainly I think at the bare minimum, do what you can. Mm-hmm. But if you can do more, well, good. Better.
And that starts with really getting real with yourself at any age, I think.
Looking at some numbers early, and I know we try not to get into things super specific, but I think that's also kind of part of this show specifically to get into the, okay, well, where might we be in certain categories
we'll
or
that.
Age brackets?
Yeah, we will get to that.
So just to give an example, or someone starting saving in their 20s. Mm-hmm. So if they're saving from age 20 to age 65, so 45 years, and you just save 10 grand a year, by the time you're 65, you're going to have $3.8 million. Again, it depends on rates of return, right, long-term sorts of things, but the fact that $10,000 a year is all it takes, and you multiply that by 45, so $450,000 you've saved, that goes a long way when you start early.
Right, and we talk about this too, and I think you mentioned it earlier, one of you, I think it was Cole, talking about automating your savings, how important that is, out of sight, out of mind. And I think we all are living, breathing petri dishes. I mean, I learned that lesson the hard way early on. If you get a pay increase and you're already living a decent lifestyle, when you get that pay increase, don't just start buying shoes, Tracy. You know, put it in
the
a savings.
The lifestyle creep is real. Yeah.
Put it in savings account or put it in a Roth.
To that point, that's why I hate some of these rules of thumb or what percentages should I be doing.
Right.
You know what? If you just came out of school and you're making great money, or you got that one position that, honestly, maybe you got lucky or you seized the opportunity, but you don't know that you'll be doing that for 10 years straight. Well, those rules of thumb, spend 20, 30% on housing, that may not apply. That might be your only 10 years to save. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should be saving 50 or 60%.
Yeah.
You know, you think about some of the athletes out there where it's a very short career span in that career. If you were using normal rules of thumb, you might be overcommitting on housing, cars, all those debts. So that's just something to keep in mind too. And I think you're sharing it as you maybe make more, or you're making above what your needs are, really consider, do I have to go up? Do I need that bigger home or apartment? Or, hey, is every other pay left now just more for my savings, or more for me to pay down debt, more for me to get ahead with?
Mm-hmm. And we see people of all ages who come to us with all different kinds of circumstances. Some are interested in debt management. Some are interested in taking a windfall and doing something relevant with it. So it doesn't matter what station you are in life. These rules really apply to everybody. Talking about risk management and the dynamics of that, I guess my question for you, if we could just help people understand, depending on what stage of life you're in, of mm-hmm. course. And we're going to get to the breakdown a little bit later just for fun. But besides saving money, what other kinds of things should be on the radar to, you know, kind of, you know, achieve your success down the line?
So I think kind of in the context of that, you mentioned risk management. So it's not as just enough to save money, but you want to make sure you're investing that money specifically. I think we've seen too many instances where a client may come to us, or anyone may come to us, and they might have a retirement plan sitting in cash, and that cash isn't working for you long term. That happens way too often. So the idea is make sure that money is actually working for you, and how that works is going to change as you get older. So when you're younger, and I'll let you. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I just had a question. So, and I know the answer, but let's help people understand what this means. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about risk tolerance, right?
Yeah, that's
assessing your risk first.
Yeah.
And nobody talks about that. And when you're pilfering through, you know, social media and YouTube and all of the, you know, the Facebook chronicles to try to get your information, they leave a lot of really good information out. You want to make sure that you're not just kind of jumping into crypto or jumping into some kind of wild scheme that could destroy your potential for growth later. You want to really do your research. And the first step to that is to let a professional assess your risk tolerance. Let's tell people what that means.
Yeah. So obviously everyone's going to be built just a little bit different, but at the very core is, can you sleep at night when the market's up, when the market's down, when we're seeing all sorts of that fluctuation, that volatility? If you're the kind of person that generally speaking, doesn't really pay a whole lot of attention to that, you might actually have a higher capacity for risk than you would think, because mm-hmm. you're not going to be paying attention to those ups, those downs. When the market's down 30% during COVID, you're not the one that's, hey, I need to sell everything, get out now. So if you're in that position where you can ride those waves, well, you ought to consider being more aggressive or taking advantage of more stocks. If you're that kind of person, maybe it is like the crypto, not something we'd necessarily recommend, but that's definitely an aggressive way to invest.
I know of somebody who had a 401k through an employer and got a new job and was preparing to roll that into a new 401k and learned that this person is in their 20s, mm-hmm. they learned that they had been allocated as though they were 80-year-old person. Can you ever recoup that loss? How do you fix that? And for the every person who doesn't have a certified financial planner, they want to kind of take the first step to assessing risk and they see something like, I mean, how do you even know when you don't have a CFP, how you're allocated, what kind of model you're in?
That's the hard part. Excuse me. That's where you have to separate even sometimes between where's the investment manager's role or piece, and then where's the piece for me, myself, or for my financial planner, because they're really different. I mean, the idea of sitting down with someone, measuring what are your behaviors, what's your history, what are you likely to do in these different scenarios, but then also having an ongoing relationship where you learn about the person or the family. You know, how do they view this? How do they react to this? What are their habits? What are their patterns in last market cycle or prior market cycles? These are all things that truly lead to the art of matching up someone's risk tolerance, that individual who can sleep well at night versus what kind of portfolio or what's the most efficient model for you. And I kind of stray at the idea of ages being the determiner. You know what, if that 20-some-year-old was really mm-hmm. conservative and they were really fearful about
good
things,
point.
They may be in that older, or dare I say not older, but more conservative model. And on the opposite end, if you're in your 80s and everything's already taken care of and your pension and Social Security are covering everything, you might actually be able to afford 100% risk or equity kind of model and anywhere in between. So that's where we think it really takes that relationship and having someone looking over your shoulder sometimes to say, mm-hmm. is this your real risk tolerance or is this you being emotional in a moment right now? And that's only proven out through an ongoing relationship.
Yeah, which unfortunately, like at the 401k level, generally isn't going to be happening. There's not someone that's usually reaching out to the individuals to say, hey, is this the right spot for you? It's just, hey, we're going to collect that fee probably and just leave it at that.
That
part's difficult. That's unfortunate.
So maybe they should ask, you know, ask the questions of the individual department that's handling that for them.
Ask the questions, or even if you don't know or don't have a resource that you'd be comfortable reaching out to, most retirement plans have a target date fund available within them. So it might look like 2040 or 2060 or 2065. Essentially, the way that those are designed is it's saying that year, so that target date, is when you're expected to retire. So the idea is the further that's out, the more aggressive that retirement plan is going to be or that investment is going to
be.
The
second number.
So if it's 2065, that's going to be very aggressive, mm-hmm. right? Because that's 40 years in the future.
Mm-hmm. In theory, though, that's why we don't always like those, though, because that's where it matters to be specific, why you probably want a planner than a one-size-fits-all solution.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. But not everybody has, you know, that opportunity. So that's just if you
don't. Well, that's why we're here, Cole. We're trying to give them that opportunity.
I know. But, you know, for those that don't, I just want to present the idea that that's still an option. Mm-hmm. So the benefit is that you get closer to that date. it kind of creates a glide path where it gets more conservative for you, so you don't really have to think so much about what the individual options look like. Rather, it kind of automates that whole
process. Riddle me this
for you.
Then, Cole. What happens in 2065 when I hit that age? Do I start managing it on my own? Do they give me my money back?
In 2065, generally just turns into like a target retirement portfolio instead of 2065 still. And I think most of those kind of blend into a 60-40 about. So 60% stocks, 40% bonds. And I don't think any of them really change much beyond that from what I've seen.
That's where I see a flaw, man, right? If you're thinking of it that
not,
way.
Not everybody's going to be there.
I'm with you.
But, again, this is for generality. We're speaking generality. Because I'd rather
pay attention.
Yeah, but, you know, people aren't going to know how to assess your large cap growth companies or how much
help.
International company. I agree with that.
That's the point, though, because some of those target date funds, they package it up, make it, oh, I've done it, I'm done. And you go and you walk away, and then 30 years later you come back and wonder, what was I doing? What was I in? And I'm just speaking a little bit facetiously maybe, but the idea of if you just put it in or package it up there, I mean, it's a big play on your mind, right? I mean, we still have a target date. Most people have a target date in mind. If you said, oh, instead of this blended portfolio and these eight stocks or mutual funds, let's just call it a 2055, and you don't even talk about what's in it, it's a wonderful marketing tool. So I just wanted to share that because it's the same thing. You have to pay attention, though, because if you wrap it up and sleeve it and call it 2065, well, when are you really going to retire? If you're going to retire 10 years earlier, if you're going to retire later, perhaps your spouse works as well. I mean, these are the ideas where there can be some flaws or holes in that. So I'm with you, Cole, on it's better than nothing or being in cash, but at the same – or maybe not, though, but the at the same time – if you're educated, talking to an advisor, maybe you have one available in your plan, maybe you're listening to us and want some advice or a consultation, but the idea of, you know what, is that really the fire and forget method? Are there any, I guess, flaws with it? Not even to poke holes, but just so people are aware that there are some flaws or drawbacks, things to consider, be aware of in those.
Yeah, but... yeah, I'll leave it there.
All right. Yeah, exactly.
I'll leave it there.
We're talking a lot about younger, earlier stages, but let's talk about the middle age milestone area of life, you know, where you're kind of in your 40s, you're starting to really start to plan getting your family together. Does healthcare play into all of this, healthcare costs at earlier ages, or is it really more relevant as you approach retirement? More closely?
I think in the sense that you ought to have a cash reserve, and especially as you get older, some 20s, you should have something established. But by the time you're in your 30s and your 40s, so on and so forth, there's probably, I don't want to say probably, but maybe a spouse, maybe a house, maybe there are kids. There are a lot more responsibilities that you have on your plate now versus when you were in your 20s, when things were simple. So having that cash reserve in place becomes a lot more important. So having that helps with that health care expectation conversation, where if something happens, if there's a surprise, you get hurt, kid gets hurt, car accident, whatever, then we don't have to worry about dipping into retirement funds, but that's protected there. But whether or not it's, we're talking like from an insurance standpoint, hopefully we have options through the employer, but there are healthcare markets, there are a lot of people out there that can help identify that. I know we've had people on the podcast before that talk through that. But definitely something, obviously, as life gets more complex, becomes more important.
How do people in their 50s and 60s preparing for, whether it's Social Security or STRS or OPRS, the state-funded retirement systems, for those who don't know, how do they assess retirement readiness with those on deck in a few years as well? Is there a sort of a rule of thumb in creativity for that?
It's really hard to. I mean, not rules of thumb again, but the idea of you have one program or one entity to call, and they know about that entity, whether it's one of those you mentioned, the bigger state pensions, maybe it's your 401k like we were saying earlier. I mean, each of those entities is dealing with what they deal with. I don't know how else to say it. It might be the pension. It might be the 401k. It might be some 529 or college funding. But they're not really piecing together all of the parts of the plan. And that's where I see some of these flaws, or why I'm maybe harping on some points here, because if you're looking or talking to just OPRs or just STIRs, or you make that phone call, well, then what else was going on in your life? You know, if you have a rental property or you have other income, you know, your spouse has a wonderful job and they're doing well, you know, how does that play into taxes? Because when some of these representatives with well intentions and a great heart, when they start talking to you, they don't know your situation. Mm-hmm. They don't know that perhaps you're well off or well to do, or, hey, you and your spouse have been saving since you were 16. I mean, these are things where rules of thumb really get people into trouble, where you might want to have that CFP or that other advisor who can pull in your OPRs, your STIRs, maybe your Social Security with that other pension. I mean, especially someone who's navigated 30, 40 years of working in and out of the private sector, that's where if you have one phone call with Social Security or one of those groups, you might be missing something, because you really have to pull all those pieces together.
It's a puzzle. It is a puzzle for just somebody like me who doesn't do this every day.
It's so complex. Yeah, I mean, the idea of, and then you get bum advice, like what you rightfully said, why we're here, though. There's so much bum advice, whether it's on the internet or a friend's advisor or something like that, where there's nothing in writing. There's no research on it. It's just two people talking. And if one of them's wrong, or they're missing some of the facts, or they're not even explaining all the considerations, oh, yeah, now I want to take action. I come home that night and, you know, I need to do something to make sure my PERS is better, or that I'm not getting taxed more on my Social Security. But you might have heard a little bit of a nugget of an idea that, I hate to say, someone was trying to push you to get a reaction.
Yeah.
But for some advisors, there is a bad incentive sometimes to give half advice or half of the story. And that's where this education piece and hopefully doing some of it on your own is going to help you.
And one shot, these people that think that you can take one shot, evaluate your plan one time, and then right off into the sunset is insanity. Yeah. I have learned that. You have to kind of continue to be vigilant and work with your professional team to make sure that everything is in line today, tomorrow, 5 years from now, 10 years from now.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about. Like, your 30s are going to be different from your 20s, different from your 40s, so on and
right.
so forth. Like, life changes so much and it changes so quickly that you can't just start.
5 years, when someone says 5 years, what are you going to do in 5 years? When I look back at the last 5 years, I'm sure you guys can do the same thing. So much changes in that short amount of time.
We had a global pandemic.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And I talking about these different age bands and the way that life changes or happens, I'm thinking about in my career here, we've had three major tax law changes, whether it was ACTERA, the Bush tax cuts, whether it was some of the Obama tax changes and the health care, or whether it was even the Trump tax cuts. I mean, each one of those was a different package of thousands of pages, different maneuvers, and depending upon how much you're paying attention, you know, what were the changes in each of those three? Did you react to those? Those are also our points we're making, where, you know what, if you got hired as a pharmacist in 2001, you've been working away, you have your family, you're doing great. You may not have paid attention to each of those tax laws. You might have heard the news or the headlines, but how does this change my portfolio? Mm-hmm. How does this change where I should be saving for retirement? Those are all things that played in at each of those tax changes that hopefully you were paying attention. And if not, because there is so much going on, it's another reason to talk to an expert, talk to an advisor, someone whose job it is just to pay attention to those changes.
And that's one component. Another component is legacy and estate planning. We talk a lot about this at our company. It's a big part of our role with our clients to help them assess their needs and create a baseline for what they need today. And again, as life moves forward and things change, so one size does not fit all in this arena either. Why is it so important? Let's explain to people why estate planning matters when it comes to your retirement planning.
Well, for instance, when I started here doing this, Ohio still had an estate tax. Today, Ohio does not have an estate tax. There are plenty of estate plans that were drafted with state tax provisions in mind that are no longer relevant even. So that's just the immediate example that comes to my mind. But when you're thinking about life changes, tax laws change, that's an easy one to me, where you might have hamstrung your spouse or your partner and said, no, you don't get this money because then they'll tax it at the state level. Well, if that goes away, they should have all the flexibility and freedom in the estate that they need. And that's something that if you're not staying current, meeting with your advisors, you might still have an old will or trust that's going back to pre-2001 law.
Yeah, and take it a little bit maybe closer to home. As you think at the individual level, what do we want to provide for our family, our kids, nieces, nephews, whomever? So that there are a lot of creative ways that you can do that, in ways that you can actually build something out that's a little bit more real to provide for them. So if you've considered something like a trust, for example, to say, okay, well, you can't touch that money until you're 30 years old or 35 years old or whatever age brackets or restrictions you want to put on that, you can have those maybe healthy handcuffs, right? Protect the kids from themselves so they're not blowing up any financial future or any legacy. But definitely some creative solutions out there, especially if you have younger children or maybe we don't trust significant others of those children, whatever it may be. But a lot of ways that you can kind of design things at the family level to protect everybody or maybe improve that legacy you're leaving.
And when you're in your 20s and 30s, don't discount the relevance of having a good estate plan just because you're in your 20s and 30s. You know, so when you're in your 20s, you know, until I think you don't get your front part of your brain until you're like 26 years old. So your executive decision making isn't even all there in fairness to 20 to 26 year old people. So it is important because you're going to tap into whatever money you have saved to sustain your lifestyle if there's a catastrophe or something that you're not prepared for at any age, especially starting out, because you're by yourself at that point.
Right. Or even in that in-between phase in your 20s or 30s where you might be with someone or you have that relationship that hasn't gone to the legal document of marriage yet, but it's still someone that's super important to you in your life. Or maybe you have decided, hey, we're not going to get married, but we're life partners. These are all reasons that if you're younger, get your estate plan done, because you can definitely take control. You know, some families may not want to recognize your partner, they didn't like your partner or whatever. Well, if you have your estate plan done and something happens, that partner is going to be in control. If something happens and there's no document, it doesn't matter that that person loved you and they wanted you to be the decision maker. They're going to go back to the family that doesn't want to talk to you and doesn't want to treat you any or treats you no different than someone off the street. So that's another reason why if you're that 20s, 30s, even 40s, I mean, you think people think they're invincible. They really do. And the idea of getting an estate plan done, letting it collect dust, it's a wonderful thing. And if or when it, I mean, not if, when it comes up, because we're all going to get have the number called at some point, it's going to be a lot easier for those that are left.
Next of kin laws are very, very specific. So if you don't have that great relationship, to your point, maybe it's parents, siblings, cousins, whomever, I definitely have those documents so no one else is left making that decision.
And make sure you have beneficiaries assigned to those other accounts. We've seen lots of disasters in that, and I actually lived through one myself where my relative had an annuity built into a pension, an existing pension that he had forgotten about. And it was beneficiaried over to his ex-wife. So when he passed away, it threw the entire estate into probate. After all, you know, dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's, this little $5,000 annuity ended up costing tens of thousands. So make sure you have beneficiaries assigned and make sure you're looking at your estate planning and your legacy planning. What does your legacy look like in your mind? All right, let's get to the fun part. We're getting close to the end here. So this is always a fun conversation with people. If you want to have some fun on your own, you can kind of check out a retirement calculator like calculator.net and plug in your numbers to see where you could be just for fun. But I wouldn't hold that as the holy grail of information without a professional. I'll just say that right now.
Straight line projections are never perfect.
Yeah. And these are rough guidelines. You know, this is not something that is cut, you know, carved and cut solid. But in your 20s, so I've read where financial experts recommend aiming to save or have the equivalent of an annual salary by the time you reach 30. So how do you help people assess where they are as compared to these kinds of benchmarks when we're talking about today?
So I think, honestly, in our case, so obviously these are our rule of thumbs, these are benchmarks, but at the individual level, in my mind, it's going to be so different because we're working toward future goals. We're working toward more specifics versus those generalities. So I think for a lot of people, that number could be so much more. And by the reverse of that, that number could also be less, depending on whether or not their goals are maybe a little bit more simpler. We want to retire earlier, but we want to live a more modest lifestyle. So I think kind of figuring out who the people are going to change that so much, more at the practical level, I would say.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's another function of great marketing in our industry. You know, what's your number? How much should you have saved by this age?
I think it's cool.
It's really bringing it out to people to show, hey, you need to save more.
Mm-hmm.
You need
mm-hmm.
to do more. I mean, there's a lot of mental games or tricks or marketing
can
wrap up behind it.
Don't delay.
That's the idea of, you know what, even if it is a couple $100 or whatever you have right now, that's the starting point, not, oh, when I get my promotion or when I move or when this thing in the world changes. You'll always find excuses to delay that. Just commit to saving something now. Pick that number. Hopefully make it a forced savings or a routine. And then after a while, then look back to say, where am I? What are my needs? Not some generic, you know, what should a 30-year-old have at 30 years old? You know, let's start with you and your plan first, because some of this my number stuff and all that, it's so variable and it can change, and it may make you feel good on the inside to look at it and go, aha, I'm halfway towards my thermometer. But if the underlying details aren't true or they're not real, it doesn't matter. That's the part, again, I get a little frustrated here thinking about all the good marketing dollars put behind this, and it's a lot of psychology.
Right.
Now I want to hear the marketing dollars behind the age 30, though, just to see how I'm doing.
Marketing dollars behind age 30.
Right.
All right. It says you might aim to have saved the equivalent of 1 to 2 times your annual salary. So if you're earning $60,000 a year, you might aim to have $60,000 to $120,000 saved by the time you're 40.
I have time.
And don't rely solely on employer benefits, right? You know, don't ignore your financial planning, all the things we're talking about.
Definitely.
Don't overlook your emergency savings.
Yep.
Don't not review your investments, you know, with a professional, and do not ignore your health insurance needs. That's really critical at that age, at that age group. By the 40s, you might aim to have saved 3 to 4 times your salary by the time you're 50. So how specific to this, because now we're getting into family and spouse and all this house and stuff. How do you adjust a retirement plan? I would assume that includes a spouse, that the spouse ramps that up, you know, helps to ramp up your retirement plan. But is there another way to do that?
I wouldn't even
avoid
necessarily.
Midlife crisis spending?
Well, yeah. that one's always fair. I don't even know if necessarily you would plan to say, well, a spouse is going to ramp that up, because you're also at that stage of life where there are kids, and maybe someone makes that decision where, hey, I'm going to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, it's we're still managing the household the best that we can. Expenses maybe go up, but savings are still the same. So you have to manage that the best you can. So again, I don't know that there's necessarily that one size fits all or that expectation there. But yeah, if both spouses are working, both spouses are saving, maybe there are no kids, maybe you're saving a boatload or just traveling a ton. Who knows? So again, it's all so different. That's what's so fun about it.
All right. A couple more and then we're going to wrap it up. By your 50s, it says you should have aimed to have earned 5 to 6 times your annual salary by the time you're 60. And when you're 60, 8 to 10 times your annual salary if you plan to have a more lavish retirement lifestyle. So basically, you know, we're encouraging people to make sure that they have all of the other components of their retirement plan in place in order to meet the need of the 60 plus headed towards retirement. And, you know, that includes getting help when there's inflation impact and when you have special needs, special situations, catastrophes and that sort of thing. And that's what we deal with every day. People come to us at all stations of life with many questions and concerns. And we enjoy helping them through those hurdles and through those milestones. If you would like to come to us to talk to us about your financial baseline, we're happy to give you a complimentary consultation, sit down with you and go through it, offer you some tips and tricks. And it's just, remember, it's never too late to start. It doesn't matter how much you save, just start. We are glad you tuned in, and we hope you'll come back. We are Managing to Be Wealthy.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a one-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.